Eve from Carmel Valley.
Hi, I'm Andrea. I'm an alcoholic. Can we just take a minute and say a prayer that God speaks through me and you hear whatever it is that you need to hear tonight? Okay. Welcome to the newcomers, and welcome to those of you who are coming back. I recognize some faces. And welcome to those of you who have years of sobriety who are here maybe feeling hopeless tonight. I can relate to all of those. Thanks, Sam. Sam must like to see me squirm. never in a million years did I think that I would ever be standing up here sharing my story at an AA meeting. That's for sure. My sobriety date is September 14th, 1998. So I have 21 years sober, and I could not get one day at the end of my drinking. I could not get one day sober on my own. So it is only by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in the program that I get to be here today. And I think someone, your speaker, or must have maybe canceled or something because you texted me Monday. I don't know. Anyway, he said Monday, and he said I saw the date on it, and today is the 14th anniversary of my sister passing away from this disease. And so I was pretty sure I was supposed to say yes. I have not always said yes when I've been asked to speak. Sometimes I just have too much fear and can't get out of my own way to do that. But when she passed away, I knew my purpose, and I knew my purpose was to recover and to help other women recover. And I don't know how well I've done at fulfilling that purpose, but I keep trying every day. Yeah, I get to be here, and a friend of mine who I've known my entire sobriety and, you know, sharing about being nervous, and every time I ever share my story at a meeting, I'm always nervous, and she's always saying, you know, God's got you and all these great things, and it's amazing to have friends that can do that for us. And so she told me to play a song and dance, and I'm like, perfect. I couldn't think of a song, so I said, I messaged her back, and I said, I need a song. And so she messaged me a song to dance to, and I played it, and I was dancing by myself, and if you haven't done it, it's really great. I don't know why I thought I had to wait for weddings or AA like sober dances to dance. Like, I do it every morning now. It's part of my morning routine, and it's awesome. It's probably like my favorite part of my day. This morning I danced to 3 songs, and then normally it's just 1. But so anyway, I danced. to a song, and I realized that it was somebody else. The artist who sang that song also died of our disease. So again, it was just another thing. Like, I get to do this. I get to be here, and I hope that I can carry a message. And if I don't, the message is in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did not know that for quite a long time. I really wasn't interested in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not come here to find God. I came here because I didn't want to die, and I wanted to talk about the Big Book for a minute. I didn't know that the solution was in there, and I thought, you know, I was just not interested in it. Like, I called my sponsor with my drama du jour. I'm going to be all over the place. I'm not doing this chronologically, but I would call my sponsor with, you know, my drama du jour, and he would say, like, you know, are you reading the book? And that was clue to me, like, you're not helpful, and the conversation is over. And I had no interest in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous until I got really, really desperate in sobriety, and now I absolutely love it, and my life makes sense once I read that book with an open mind. But I needed somebody to take me through and help me with that. It was written in 1934, published 1935, something like that. 1939. And, you know, the language is different. So it was really helpful to have my sponsor, you know, break that all down for me. And that is when my life, it made sense. Why? So I'll go back to what it was like. Why, as... And thank you, Kyle, for your 10-minute And I relate to being like a shy, uncomfortable kid. And I didn't, even in junior high, I went to an elementary school and then I switched schools when I went to junior high to my neighborhood school, and I didn't know how to make friends. That does not make me an alcoholic. There are alcoholics who are social and they do cool stuff and play sports and they're popular. I was just not like that. My sister, you know, was much cooler than I, always way cooler than I was, and I always looked up to her. But I went to junior high school, and I didn't know how you meet friends. I don't, like, what do you say to people? Like, hi? Like, I don't know how to start a conversation. And so I would sit in the library by myself, and I did that basically for 2 years of junior high school. And then the first couple of years of high school, I also would sit by myself, usually, you know, a library or somewhere. And, like, if I made one friend, like, it was a big deal that I had somebody else to talk to. And then I ended up making a couple of friends, maybe my sophomore year. And I had these two girlfriends, and it was like, you know, it was fun. I was kind of a part of, and we would get together on, I don't know, Tuesday and Thursday and watch Beverly Hills 90210. And it was all very innocent back then. You know, I think I was about 15 years old, and that's when I went to my first party. And, you know, this is the time where in high school there's homecoming dances, and, you know, boys are starting to ask girls out, and maybe girls are starting to ask girls out. I don't know. That's definitely more common nowadays. But I remember like my very first getting asked to go to a homecoming dance, and I spent the entire night afraid that the guy was going to kiss me. Like I just was in fear the entire night, and I was afraid like to dance too. And shortly thereafter, I went to my first keg party, and I had no intention either of drinking or doing drugs. Like, you know, I grew up with the Nancy Reagan era, say no to drugs. I did the little skit, like, you know, I know they're bad for you. Like, no intention ever. But I went to this keg party, and that's what people were doing. And I had this beer, and it was terrible. But I got that, what it talks about in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the doctor's opinion, I got that sense of ease and comfort at once. And it was like, I just wasn't scared anymore. And I could be in the moment, and I could just be. And I could not do that on my own. I didn't know that I was suffering from alcoholism before I ever took my first drink. And it was my solution. And it was freedom to me. And it woke me up. And in the Big Book, in Bill's story, one of our co-founders, he says that he took an exhilarating and important part in his life. And alcohol took an exhilarating and important part in my life. And I didn't know how much I was willing to give up for the effect produced by alcohol. But I gave up my hobbies. I gave up my education. I gave up any self-respect. I gave up trust. I gave up a future. I mean, I was willing to give up everything for the effect that alcohol produced. And it wasn't, of course, it wasn't a conscious decision. I loved it. I loved it. And now those friends that I was so grateful for, I am way too cool for them. Like, you know, and I ended up losing those friends as a result of my drinking and dishonesty and selfishness. And I was like, good riddance, you know, like I'm on to cooler things anyway. And so I went from this like totally scared nerd, you know, to like, I'm, you know, now I'm just like on the social ladder, trying to climb the social ladder in high school. And I semi-succeeded at that. And I was no longer afraid of the boy kissing me, like, through the dance. I mean, I don't really remember any dances, actually, after I started drinking. There's pictures of me, you know, at dances. I remember my senior prom and being passed out in the back of a van and not able to go to the after party. I just drank at every single opportunity, and I loved it. And I grew up here in San Diego. The problem was always between drinks, though. Like, while I was drinking, all that was fine, but it was, like, during the week. And then it was back to, like, crazy town, you know? And it was, like, it was always this, like, if I had a different family, if we had more money, if we lived somewhere different, if I was 10 pounds thinner, if I had blonde hair instead of brown hair, if the guy I actually thought was cute liked me back instead of the other, you know, guy. It was just, like, I always thought if things outside of me were different, I would be okay. And when I drank, all that went away, and I was okay. And, you know, I'd never found anything that did for me what, you know, like what alcohol could do for me. So I just drank at every single opportunity. I had consequences early on. I did not connect them to my, I never connected my consequence to my drinking. It was like always someone else's fault. So, I mean, like my grades went from a 3 point something to a 0.67. My first car got taken away. I was in classes for at-risk kids, which I thought, like, cool, like, I get out of class for an hour. Like, I don't see this as a problem. And people are sitting around and talking about their problems and the eating disorder and this and the that, and I'm just like, sucks for you. You know, I don't know. I'm not talking about problems because I don't have any problems. I have solutions now, you know. I have friends. I have alcohol. I have solutions, except for, you know, when I'm not drinking. And I found a solution to that. I found alcohol in powder form, and that solved the in-between drink problem that I was having, the restless, irritable discontent. So from the time I was 17 until the time I got sober, I hardly drew a sober breath. And you know what? I liked it that way. And if I had to draw a sober breath, I was not a happy. And I remember like crying a couple of times. Like I had these couple of times where I was sober, and I'm like, it's odd that I cry every time I'm sober. Like, I don't know, just I didn't like it. So I just tried to avoid being sober at all cost. And then by the time I was 18, I went down to Mexico for the first time the night after my 18th birthday, and I absolutely loved bars. I was really scared. Going down there, the metal turnstile you have to walk through to get across the border. But once I got down there and I got into the bars, like I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I unlimited alcohol, boys, and dancing. Like, you know how I feel about dancing now. I mean, that was not always the case. But I had to drink. I mean, and that was the other thing. I couldn't dance without drinking. My sister was always like, "Let's go dance" as soon as we got into the club, and I'm like, just a minute. Like, let me pound a few drinks, and then I can do that. And we had a great time. Like, we had a great time. And I went down there at every single opportunity. And a lot of dangerous, you know, a lot of drinking and driving. And people were hurt as a result of my alcoholism. And it could have been a lot worse. And it was, you know, it wasn't good. But it was fun, too. You know, I was having a good time down there drinking and dancing and doing all that stuff. And so I just, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I just think I'm young. I quickly find people who like to drink like I do. I'm not drinking alone because I have a sister at home. Like, so it's like, it's not like I'm drinking alone or I'm doing anything. You know, it's like I have a 24-hour companion. And and then so as time, you know, went on, but it was progressing anyway. So I drank that keg beer for, you know, years because I had to. And then when I went down to Mexico, I was like, hard alcohol, like, forget the beer. I'm drinking stuff that tastes good. So I naturally just gravitate towards that. And then if there's, you know, more alcohol content in the beer, I naturally gravitate towards that. And then my ability to drink was increasing. So probably by the time I was 18, I was drinking every day. And I know that's not everybody's story, and you don't have to drink every day to be an alcoholic. And I learned about alcoholism by reading the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and looking at my experience. And the only thing that you need is when you drink, if it sets off a craving for another drink and you can't control the amount you drink, and if when you want to stop, you can't stop and stay stopped, then you're probably an alcoholic. So those are the only two things. If you have the physical allergy, which is you crave another drink, and if when you have the mental obsession that gets you to pick up another drink, then he says you're probably an alcoholic. And if that be the case, you're suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience can solve, something to that effect. And so I had to look at those. I had to look at that. I had to look at my experience. And that was pretty much set off, the craving pretty much was set off for me from the very, really early on. And then, I didn't try to quit. I was never interested in moderating. Like, why deprive yourself? Like, I don't know. I just didn't even think about that. Like, I just do what I want to do when I want to do it. And, like, my sister was different about that. Like, she seemed to have much more control over her drinking. And then she would, like, tell her boyfriend she quit smoking when she hadn't. And I'm like, why would you do that to yourself? Like, just smoke. Like, don't tell somebody you quit and then you can't smoke and you have to hide it. Like, I just tell people I smoke. Like, if you have a problem with it, too bad. But I'm just, you know, selfish, self-will, run riot, and deal with it or leave. It was my attitude. So anyway, I lost track there. So my drinking just increased. I'll get back on track here. So as I, you know, as I got older, I had more access to alcohol, and ended up working at a restaurant that had a bar, and I could drink there underage, and I liked that a lot. And it was at the beach, and it was fun, and I was drinking quite a bit. And then I, so by the time I was 20, like, I was starting to have more and more consequences. And Bill talks about in his story, he talks about how, like, finally he wakes up and this has to be stopped. Like, something finally got his attention. And if we're here tonight, like, something probably finally happened that got our attention. There was probably lots of consequences that, like, didn't get our attention. And that was the case for me. Like, it had affected a lot of areas of every area of my life. But the consequence that got my attention was when my boyfriend basically was like, you're really unhappy, and we're going to take a break. And that was like the first and I was starting to become aware, like, I'm a mess. And people that were close to me were starting to say things about my drinking. My sister, who was like my, you know, best drinking buddy, at one point was like, I don't like you when you're drinking anymore. And my boyfriend, who was a hard drinker, like, he wouldn't have been with me if he had he not been a hard drinker, but I didn't know there was a difference between a hard drinker and an alcoholic. And he was like, you have a serious problem. And I remember one night, I was 20 years old, and him yelling down the street, like, I'll never forget it. He was like, you just need to quit drinking. And my thought was, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, you know? So anyway, the threat of losing that relationship was what the thing that got my attention, and he was like the, you know, the guy of my dreams. I completely fooled this guy into thinking I was something I wasn't. Like, I was this nice, normal, sweet girl. Like, I could not have been farther from the truth. I told him I'd had a boyfriend for 2.5 years. I didn't tell him we were cheating on each other the entire time. You know, so like I like portray this image of normal, you know, like normal, but like it's so far from the truth. But he fell for it, and. Poor guy. Like, I do wish I could make amends to him, but he was done. Like, did not want my amends. And I've had opportunities to kind of do that in other ways. My motives when I wanted to make the amends to probably weren't 100% like pure, but they have been since then, and I wish I could. And I've made amends to him in my dreams since, you know. Those weren't, my motives sometimes too were like, I was making amends so we could be. Oh, just lost a lot of people. It's okay. It's okay. So, I've been able to make amends other ways. I've never treated another human being the way I treated that person, and I've also met people who were in bad relationships with alcoholic, drug addict women, and I've been able to apologize, you know, to them for what they went through, even though it wasn't, you know. It was an indirect amends. But anyway, so I was 20 years old, and that was my first attempt at getting sober. And I had seen these commercials, I guess, that said, well, I'd seen some kind of commercial that said if you have a drinking or drug problem to call this 1-800 number. And so I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to ask for help, and my sister was not interested in quitting. Like, I would say to her occasionally, like, we got to, you know, quit. Like, we got to work out and eat healthy and like stop doing this, and she really wasn't interested. So like I get to this point where I need to stop, but I'm not like going to rat out my, you know, like I can't go to anybody I know because I got to keep her confidential. You know, like I got to make sure she, you know, I can't go telling anybody. So I go to I call this 1-800 number and I go there, and they really think that I need to stay there as a patient, so they think I'm much worse off than I do. I'm like, no, that's like, can't, no, that's not going to happen. I mean, I didn't have medical insurance, I didn't come from a family who had money, I was not going to some fancy rehab, like, none of those were options for me. And so the counselor said, well, here's a list of 12-step programs, or a 12-step program, and here's the meeting schedule. So I went to my first meeting, and when people shared inside, I would say, every time someone shared, I'd be like, me too, me too, me too. And I identified, and I didn't know there was a place that people came that were struggling with the same thing I was struggling with, and that there was a solution. And everything about me was a lie and a secret, and I had this image that I was trying to portray, and I, you know, I just didn't tell anybody the truth about what was going on in my life. It didn't matter what was going on in here, as long as I looked okay on the outside, like, this didn't matter. And that was the truth for a long time in sobriety, too. As long as I could, like, get dressed up and look nice and go out and, like, you know, fake my way through life, like, it didn't matter how I was, what was going on inside of me. But anyway, I went to my first meeting, and I'm grateful for that meeting, and the seed was planted there, and the people were kind, and I left that meeting, and I thought that was great, except for the fact that they don't drink. And that was the bad news for me. And I was 20. I didn't know anybody who didn't drink. I thought maybe the other outside issues were a problem. I did think they were a problem, but I just definitely did not think alcohol was a problem. So I went to a meeting. Like, that's a ton. I mean, I'd never done that before. So, like, that's a ton of willingness. Like, I'm good. And so then I tried. The next year was me. Oh, and the boyfriend came back. So I did not meet tradition 3, which is a desire to stop drinking. I had a desire to get my boyfriend back. That did work for 9 days. And, somehow the obsession got me back to doing it again, you know. And so I lost that relationship for good. And the next year was me, I say trying to control and enjoy. Mostly it was a lot of out of control. It was just pretty much out of control drinking. I did make it 45 days one time without drinking. And then this woman at my work called, and she said, we were on the phone, and she said, and I was really proud of myself. Like, at 30 days, I was really proud. I mean, it was a really long time. And at 45 days, I was on the phone with this coworker, and she's like, you don't need to quit drinking. You just need to drink in moderation. And I'm like, I mean, I don't even know what happened from the time that phone call to me being at her house. Like, it was just like, of course, like, you know how proud I was, like, all the reasons, you know, that I needed to stop, gone, like, none of it there, like, I'm just at her house, moderate drinking, and, like, it honestly had never occurred to me, like, no consequence ever made me think I should drink less or I should stop. Like, I mean, I would have burning in my abdomen. My solution is a muffin and chocolate milk. Like, I had kidney infections. My, you know, they told me I shouldn't drink. That I took that as I should cut back, which lasted one night. You know, and I took cranberry pills, like, for years. And so anyway, this woman tells me I should just need a drink in moderation. So I'm, like, at her house, like, immediately. And it worked well that night. I had, I don't know, a couple beers, a couple cigarettes, because I always do everything. Like, if I'm going to quit drinking, I got to quit smoking at the same time. And drugs, like, the whole nine yard, which is intense. So, you know, I had some beers, I had some cigarettes, we went on the, walked on the boardwalk, and I was like, yeah, like, this is the answer, like, moderate drinking. And then the next night, I was allowed to have a glass and a half of wine. That party sucked. Like, I was just pissed. I'd rather be at home, I'd rather not drink, like, glass and a half, like, no. And then the third night, she, half, glass. Anyway, the third night, she wasn't there. So I went to, it was around Christmas time, and I went to a Christmas party, and I had a great time that night. And I blacked out and threw up red wine all over my light-colored carpet, and I was off and running again. So there's a part, you know, talks about the great obsession of every alcoholic is someday he will control and enjoy his drinking. And I got to, from that, I'm grateful for her now. I'm really grateful that I got to have that experience, that I was able to control it, but not very long, as I just shared. But I was not enjoying it. And when I'm enjoying my drinking, I'm completely out of control. So I can't do those two things at the same time, yet the obsession is to do something that I physically can't do. Anyway, I was off and drinking, and it was just like progressing, and you know, then I thought the problem was that I'm living at home and my sister doesn't want to get sober, and so I think I need to move out, and that'll solve the problem, and my drinking just increases, because now I turned 21, I have more opportunities to drink, and I drank a lot, and I drank at every opportunity, and by this point I just didn't enroll in college, I guess, for the next semester, because there was no time, there was no, like, the normalcy was not happening anymore. Like, I couldn't pretend to be normal enough to have a boyfriend. I couldn't go to school anymore. Physically, I felt like crap every day, and what I was doing to cure my hangovers in the morning so that I could get to work and I could function wasn't working, and the only thing that made me feel better is when I could start drinking as soon as I got off work. And, And I would think to myself, I might have to go back to those meetings someday. Not today. Someday, which doesn't work, you know. If it's someday, like, whatever. But, you know, the seed had been planted, so I didn't know what you guys did here. I did, but I believed that you were sober. And I had a good, you know, I had a good experience at my first meeting. And I was starting to have moments of clarity, and I was just thinking, if we're here tonight, I think there was some grace involved. And I was graced with moments of clarity, because most of the time I could not see the true from the false. To me, my drinking was normal. Normal drinking was abnormal. Somebody who didn't finish their drink, abnormal. Somebody who never puked from drinking, abnormal. You know, my drinking's normal and normal drinking is abnormal. So I cannot tell the true from the false. And I was starting to have moments of clarity about my drinking and my life. And when I started drinking, I remember my sponsor speaking one time and sharing how when he started, it looked like his life was going in this direction. And the reality is it was going in that direction. And that, you know, that was the case for me. And at the end of my drink, you know, at the end, my drinking career is relatively short. I was 21, and I felt, and I, you know, I've already shared with you what my life was like, and every single area of my life was affected. And the only reason I still had a job is because my manager was an alcoholic, and I got written up and suspended. And she sat down, you know, and she said, "I like to drink too. Go home by 11." I don't know about you guys, but I don't go home by 11 when I start drinking. So, but anyway, I still had my job because it was a sick and healthy place, but. Every area of my life had been affected, and I felt completely dead inside. So I'll get sober now. And I had this moment of clarity one night. I don't know why I had it that night. I was driving home, and I heard this voice in my head, and it said, "Quit or die." And I'd been trying to quit for a year, and I knew I couldn't do it. And I knew even that it was going to kill me, and I could not do it. And I said a prayer. And I didn't say a prayer because I grew up with a higher power or a belief in God. I said a prayer because I think people reach these hopeless places in their life or these crossroads in their life where they just happened. This is what happened. I just said a prayer, and I said, "God, please help me." And I had a huge reservation. I don't know why I'm going to share this, but maybe someone needs to hear it. I had a huge reservation that I was super pride and vainful that I would gain weight, because I had seen other people who cut soberish, and that had happened, and I was like, what I said is, "God, please help me," and I also said, "Even if I have to gain weight." that was a big step for me, because I was always like, "Just kill me," you know, because so much, all of my worth was completely wrapped up in how I look and attention, and I had nothing else going for me. I mean, I didn't really have that going for me, but I had nothing else, and I mean, depends who you asked, I guess, whether I had that gun. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So I went back to meetings. What happened also is I said that prayer. I had that surrender experience, and a power showed up in my life. And my life has never been the same since that moment. And I have drank again. I did drink again after that. But I went to meetings, and I heard people, and I felt hope. They had lives. They were happy. They were doing, you know, and my life had just gotten to barely functioning, barely making it, you know, through the day. And so I felt a lot of hope when I went to the meetings, and the people were kind and they were friendly. I don't know that I felt like I was at home. I did kind of feel like my life is over, and this is where I ended up. And so there was mixed feelings, and it wasn't, there were times where I was standing, you know, everyone's gathered around talking, and I'm standing there by myself, and I'm sober again, so I don't know how to talk to people, I don't know how to start conversations, I don't know how to do any of that, so it wasn't easy. It really wasn't easy for me to get sober. That first year was really hard, and thanks to friends who came, and Annie was one of the people who was there in my early sobriety and just let me sleep over at her house, because I had a really hard time. And I was really confused, because I was, you know, I heard the things to do at meetings. I heard get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. I heard, you know, work steps, go to meetings. I heard 90 meetings in 90 days. I heard all these things, and I did them because I was desperate, and I knew I couldn't stay sober on my own, and I didn't know how to do that, so I was willing to follow those suggestions, but I didn't understand, I thought that I was confused why now that I'm sober, that didn't solve my problem. I forgot what it was like before I ever started drinking, and so now I'm sober, so I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, and now I have all this baggage. of all this selfish harm, hurt that I've, you know, and harm that I've caused. And I really thought I deserved to be punished for, like, what I had done, because I was very, very selfish. My behaviors were very selfish and inconsiderate and caused a lot of pain for other people. And so I felt like I deserved to be punished. And it was rough. It was rough getting sober. It was super uncomfortable. And I went to a lot of meetings, and that helped. And I had this sponsor who we had a lot of things in common, and she was very kind and she was very loving. And that first year was difficult, and I followed the suggestions, and I ended up drinking. I made it to a year, and at a year and 9 days, I was supposed to be taking a cake that night. I no-showed for my own 1 year anniversary and was at the bar drinking. I thank God I ended up coming back. I ended up coming right, like, the next day. It was the woman's meeting I'd been going to every single Monday, and it was a Monday, and I went back to the woman's meeting, and I had just taken a year there probably the week before, and I had to announce myself as a newcomer, which was, you know, was not easy to do. And then, you know, I had a hard time, and I just couldn't understand. Like, I thought, well, something else must be wrong with me, because I'm not, you know, once I was going to meetings and I'm in the program and I'm not drinking, I thought, well, something else must be wrong with me because I am not okay. And so then, you know, someone was like, oh, go see my therapist. So I go see a therapist, and the therapist just wants me to take antidepressants. And after like two or three sessions of that, I decided I'd rather get a massage than keep paying her, like, to try and talk me into doing something that I didn't want to do. Like, my choice on that, you know, my intuition was not that I didn't want to go down that route. So I was just really baffled, and I'd get different sponsors, and I would be like, I'm doing everything you guys tell me to do, and I'm suffering. Like, I had never, I mean, my drinking career was short. I know a lot of people have a lot longer drinking careers, so they drink and they're depressed and they're suicidal in their disease or in their active drinking. But for me, when I stopped was when I never had suicidal thoughts until I was sober. And I didn't really, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience with depression and or things like that. But I started, I mean, I felt those things and fear and all that stuff when I wasn't drinking. And it, at the time, like, I would go to these people and nobody really seemed to know why it wasn't working for me. And I ended up meeting my current sponsor that I've had now for 19 years, and he was sharing the message from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said that the whole point of the 12 steps was to have our spirit wake up. And there was something in me that was just like, oh my God. You know, like, I hadn't had a drink. At this point, I came back into the program. It'd been like another year and a half or something, basically white knuckling, going to meetings. And when I'm like, I don't know what that person has, but that's it. That's what's wrong with me, and that's the solution. And I didn't know that I was suffering from my alcoholism when I was not drinking. And that, I thought, like, step one was that I'm powerless when I drink, and my life's unmanageable when I drink, and the insanity is when I'm drinking. I didn't get that I'm powerless when I'm not drinking because of an obsession that will get me back to drink. And I didn't get that my life's unmanageable in here. Maybe the outside things when I'm sober get straightened out, but the inside gets way more unmanageable. Alcohol was my solution, and my solution was gone, and I still need another solution to stay sober. And the insanity is not the crazy stuff I did. It's that when I'm sober, I will drink again. And I didn't understand that. But anyway, here was a living example of somebody who had recovered from their alcoholism. And some intuitive part of me knew, like, that's it. And it's really just the message of in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started working with this person. But I got to tell you, like, the truth of what I wanted, I did not want. It talks about in our book, like, if a man is to find God, like, the desire must come from within. I did not want to find God. I was not interested in finding God. I wanted a boyfriend, a college degree, designer clothes, a new car, a career. Like, I did not want God. I was like, okay, I'll pick up the newcomer, but I'd rather not. And, you know, I would do these compliant things. But, like, the truth was, I wanted all this. I wanted to live selfishly, safely. And And, you know, I'd do the step work, and I'll call my sponsor. And what I also wanted was my sponsor, I thought that I knew my sponsor had this, like, direct link and was of service all the time and was always helping alcoholics and always being of service. And, and so I thought, like, I call my sponsor has the link with God and is my middleman. I didn't know this at the time, but, like, I call you, you tell me, you know, I really didn't know how much work you did to get that connection, and nor was I interested in doing that much. You know, it says none of us like the self-searching, leveling of our pride, and the confession of our shortcomings. That's the steps, you know, that it requires, that this process requires. And my sponsor had done that, so he had the connection. He had the intuition. He was of service. Like, he was living this program, and I thought I could just benefit from having a recovered sponsor. It doesn't work that way. I mean, I'm grateful I had a recovering sponsor because, all I heard for, like, the first 10 years, I don't know, it was just always, like, trust God, be honest, follow your intuition, be of service, some form of those, you know, combination. And thank God for that because, you know, I told you about my self-seeking early decade of sobriety, and I had 7 years when I got the phone call that my sister was in the hospital. And I had, you know, a year before that, I called her and I said, you know, if you die, I'll be really sad. And then we got the phone call that she was in the hospital. And I went up there, and it was like everything that I had been practicing for up to those 7 years, like I had to do. And that was another thing I wanted. When I was newly in going to meetings, I would hear people talk about reservations, and like, you know, if this happened, would they drink or not? And I would think to myself, like, what's the worst thing I could possibly imagine happening? And I thought, would my sister die? And I didn't think I would drink if that happened. I just thought that's the worst thing I can imagine happening. And so I went up there, and it was like I had, even though I was selfish and I wasn't interested in the big book and all that stuff, I had done step work and I had done service and I had been honest and, you know, done these things to some degree. So that saved me, like following my intuition, being of service to the people in the hospital, like doing those things that I had learned as a result of being sober and having this recovered sponsor is what I did. And then, the fellowship that came around me when that happened was incredible. That was like my life, like, you know, it was all about I got to this point in recovery where I thought I had arrived. I had a point like that, like Bill also. I really like Bill's story. I didn't used to relate to it at all. But he, like, has this point in his life where he'd arrived. And for him, it's always about success and money, you know. And for me, it's always about, like, the right weight and the boyfriend, you know. It was but the same thing, like the same story, just some of the specifics are different. So I had this point where in my drinking, where I had arrived. And then when I was in sobriety, I had this other time where I thought, like, I had arrived. Like, I had the job, and I had the closet full of clothes, and I had the boyfriend, and I had, you know, whatever, all this stuff. But I was just miserable still. I was, like, so still miserable inside. And I thought all that stuff was the solution. And so I quit the job. I had health problems. I couldn't, like, work out like I was. I couldn't use all the things that I was using for ease and comfort and distraction that I had been using. And I had to quit my job because of health issues. I was starting to see, like, my sick behavior, sick patterns with relationships and men. My sister passed away. Like, a lot happened at that time in my life when I had 7 years. And then I ended up, that year was, anyway, getting through that year. And then when I had 8 years, I remember sitting in a meeting and I had the awareness, like, what I've done up until this point to stay sober isn't going to continue to work. And when I had 9 years, I was sitting with my sponsor and I was confused because I had done step work, you know, and I was just like, that didn't work. It's really not the steps, it's me. The steps work. It was me and my half measures, and I didn't know that. I had 9 years, and I was with my sponsor, and I said, if this doesn't work, meaning the steps, I said, I hope I get killed in a car accident, nobody else is hurt, and my mom has a heart attack at the same time. Because she had two daughters, and one was already gone. And I was serious. Like, I was tired of suffering in sobriety. And having no way to get freedom from this. And my sponsor said to me, I can't take away your alcoholism. And like I said, like this is the only, I'm like, if this person like can't help me, like I'm screwed. And also, like I thought that, you know, my sponsor was the solution. And so that for me, thank God, like my desperation has always taken me to prayer and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous for my solution. And I finally got desperate enough to open that book. And the title, the group conscious title when they wrote the book was A Way Out. But there are like some 13, I don't know how many, 12 or 13 other books with that title. So they changed it. But I was like, would it have made any difference if I knew like the title on that book was The Way Out? Like if I knew the solution was described in there, would it have read it any earlier? Probably not. Like I had to live my life, do it my way, you know, and fail to get desperate enough to read the book with an open mind. And I just was begging God, show me the truth, show me the truth. You know, I had all these ideas about why I wasn't a real alcoholic. I was young, on and on and on. And I'm like, you have to help me, you know, see the truth. And I was shocked when I was reading the book. I was like shocked to start identifying with that and start seeing the truth about my drinking. I had no idea like that it, how the role, I had no idea I was an alcoholic. I was just blown away by that. And there were times where I would just, I spent 6 months in my room with the book, with the book study, writing, just writing and writing and writing. And there were times I'd put my hand on my chest and be like, whew. Partially, sometimes I'd see my own selfishness, you know, and I'm thinking I'm going to have to do a fist step at some point. Like, I need to find someone on the other side of the world. Because, like, if anybody knew how, and really, I can tell you all right now what it was. It's like, I want to get as much as I can and give as little as possible without you knowing. You know, like, I want to look altruistic and look generous, but not really be generous. And I just thought, like, nobody can know that about me, you know, like, the level of my selfishness. So anyway, that took me on a journey through the steps again, where I took the steps, and my life has never been the same since, which does not mean that it has been easy. And there's been a lot of growing up, a lot of lessons to learn, and you know, I've had more of those. Like what I've done up to this point isn't going to be enough if I want to stay sober. That's still the case. Like that's the case today. Like I need more of a deep and effective, you know, spiritual experience. And this year, I got to go. So my amends to my sister, I made amends to her when she was still alive, and she was like, and I, the worst thing I've ever done, the worst harm I ever caused was to my sister. And I made amends to her, and she was like, I forgive you. Like, you know, amazing to me when I think about, like, you know, how the difference, you know, between like how kind and generous and, you know, she was versus like me, and I'm here, you know? But anyway, I made amends to her, and then after she passed away and I went through the steps again, you know, I had made a lot of amends, and I'm like, what amends do I still owe? And there was a few of them, and this, there were parts of taking the steps that really flowed through me, like my concept of God, and there were just different parts, and the amends I owed was something that like just came through me. And my amends to her, which totally shocked me, was to enjoy my life and to be a good sister to our half-sister and to help other women and to love and to laugh and to dance. Like, you know, it was like that, and I was like, you know, I think I deserve to be punished for, like, the horrible things I did. And, like, the amends was, like, the totally the opposite of that. And I will wrap it up. I told my sponsor this year, you know, I said, you know, I don't know that I've done a very good job of living up to that amends. And he's like, well, what would that look like or whatever? But anyway, it turned out I got to fulfill a dream of mine this year that I forgot that I even had. Like, so that's a gift of sobriety. Like, there was a dream I had that I forgot, and I was too scared to even take steps, you know, I was too scared. I went to a French school as a kid, and I was always curious, if I went to a French-speaking country and was immersed, would I be able to pick up the language? Would I remember it? Like, that kind of thing. But I was too scared to even go to the French meetup, like, to try speaking. You know, it was just, the fear kept me from doing it. And so I got to do that this year, and I didn't know how it was going to happen or how it was going to come together. And it was a great lesson for me. I always want to be arrive. Like, I just want, like, to arrive at some, like, place where life is easy and comfortable and, like, forever. I don't know. It hasn't happened. But what I found out is, like, I had to start where I'm at. Like, I had to go, and I had to be willing to make mistakes, and I had, you know, like, I just had to start where we are. And so I was able to do that, and you know, it didn't solve all my problems. And I don't know, I thought, like, 3 months in Europe, but, like, I don't know, it was just gonna, the next indicated steps were gonna be so clear, and maybe I'd be living abroad, and, you know, all this stuff. And what happened is I had to come back home, and, like, all the things I was, you know, struggling with before were all there. And it's like, no, you have to just face these things. And so, you know, now I've adjusted to being back, and I'm putting my hand out and saying yes and doing uncomfortable things that, and praying my ass off and reading the big book. I can't just pick and choose which directions I follow in there. The ones that are easy and convenient and I remember. Like, I have to, I don't know, I do. I require a lot. I'll wrap it up thinking, you know, about, like, what it was like today and the fact that, you know, I got up and I meditated and I sent some text messages out to friends and I read the book and I did my dance and I did this Qigong thing and then I got to go and be present with my mom today. And I heard my mom say, someone asked, how's your day? And she's like, it's a good day. Like, this is the day the anniversary of my sister dying and my mom was destroyed and I get to be there and my mom gets to have a good day because of it, you know? And I'm pet sitting and I thought about how, like, people trust me in their homes and people trust me with their husbands and, like, I'm trustworthy, you know? Like, I'm not going to steal your shit. Like, if you, I won't steal a penny. I won't steal a stamp. Like, I made amends. I don't like that shit. I don't want to do that, you know? So anyway, none of this would be possible without the solution that I found here, the higher power that I found here, and I just have no other way to live. Like, if I could have found another way around following those directions in that book that worked, I'd be doing it. My life would look a lot different than it looks now. This is not what I thought 21 years of sobriety would look like, but, you know, I hope someday I can get to the point where my life is none of my business and that I can just be used by God. And that, I mean, I might float off the planet if that ever happened, but, like, I'd like to get a lot closer to that than, you know, full of self. So anyway, thank you.